Good to go.
Thank you.
Microphone now.
All right, we're starting. Please take a seat. Thank you.
I'm just going to start as you guys are taking your seats. Okay, so if we can lower the sound. Hey guys, I'm going to start because we have kind of a time constraint. Okay, just to explain a couple of these other things with schizophrenia. You do see delusions. We just talked about those. You'll see hallucinations, which is... hallucinations can be with any of the five senses. So this is the, I can feel ants on my body. Hallucinations. I can feel ants in my body. I can see. I saw it. I know it was there. So it can be sight. It can also be tactile. Auditory are the, for those with schizophrenia, auditory is the most common. With schizophrenia. So the challenge with all of these, the hallucinations, is that they are, for the person experiencing them, they're not experiencing them like, I think I saw this. They felt it. They saw it. They experience it as real as something you experience. That's how challenging a hallucination is. And they can be much worse when they're alone. The challenge with some of the medications that... that people will go on is it does deal with, in some ways, the delusions and the hallucinations, but the effects of the medications, the side effects of the medications are very, very challenging. You will have motor behavior and catatonia and disorganized speech as well with schizophrenia, and then you'll also have negative symptoms. So let me show you what those are. So negative doesn't mean like the other ones are positive, okay? This doesn't mean that delusions, hallucinations, disorganized speech are positive. What negative means is it's the lack of, okay? So the lack of emotional expression, if you hear the terms flat affect, that's what it means. Avolition, the A means not. Volition means motivation. So not having motivation is avolition. So a lack of enthusiasm and interest. Anhedonia, which is not hedonic. So hedonic is pleasure. So non-pleasure. That means a lack of interest in pleasure in the world. Allogia. Logia meaning speech. So not having speech. So having speech difficulties and abnormalities with speech. And then asociality. Not being social is the social and relationship difficulties. The thing, so these are the negative symptoms of schizophrenia. The challenge again with, say, the medications is if you'll see people who are on the streets here in San Diego, you'll see what looks like the speech difficulty or the motor difficulties. So it looks like a schizophrenia symptom, which is, you know, you'll see the tongue in the mouth a lot. That's actually most often what you call tardive dyskinesia. It is actually a response to the medication, and it is often permanent. So it's such a perfect example of there's a reason why people go, I don't want to be on this medication, because symptoms from the medications, the side effects are hard. So we can be kind of condemning about you won't. And, you know, we were just talking about one of the most common, we'll talk about it in a bit, but those on bipolar medications will often go off of them for various reasons. And, you know, it's very concerning because the medications can be very helpful to their symptoms. But I think we just need to have, even though we might be medication positive, meaning we think it's helpful, you just want to be aware of how challenging those medications can be on their sleep, on their sex life, on their eating, on their motivation in life. Okay, so, and we have had brothers and sisters within our communities, disciples with schizophrenia have lived productive lives, and you guys have loved them, and you don't even know they were in your presence. So we do have the ability as a family to be a place of safety for people with pretty severe challenges, right? There is a much higher suicide risk with schizophrenia. It's very, very debilitating. People can hold jobs, but it's very challenging to typical functioning in life. Schizophrenia is actually that's asocial, is mostly diagnosed in the late teens and early 20s. That's when the onset is, and that's when the diagnosis happens. It is believed to be hereditable. What's amazing is we still haven't found where and how, but it's got so many physical, obvious things attached to it. It's more like autism in the sense that there's, you know, the clarity of the physical markers that we haven't found yet on either of those is you can see it biologically. So the heritableness of it is more clearly seen. And major challenges of anxiety and depression and substance use that overlap, you know, speaking of overlapping with schizophrenia, the life prognosis is difficult. And there is the functioning is so challenging that life expectancy is lower. So it's just important to realize that we can lampoon this again on shows and stuff like this. It's very challenging living with any of the psychotic disorders. Now, this is the spectrum, because remember, the DSM has a spectrum. And so delusional disorder, we just covered when it's just delusions. You can have what you call a brief psychotic disorder, which means you don't have full-blown schizophrenia. It just happens in a one-time kind of basis. It can be associated with medications. Often, if somebody has a brief psychotic disorder, later they will develop. There is a high rate of development of schizophrenia later. As saying, schizophreniform is the less than 6 months, schizophrenia is more. So it's just an early diagnosis when someone hasn't shown those symptoms longer. And schizoaffective is a lot of the schizophrenia symptoms, but you also have depression and anxiety. But this is where it gets really confusing, because you can have depression and anxiety symptoms with schizophrenia. So is it schizoaffective? You would usually use that term if it means that their predominant symptoms are depression and anxiety. Okay? All right. I'm just going to tap on these because this is what we're talking about next week. But these are the big ones. These are the ones that most of us experience. Either we have them or someone we know has them. So this would be the depressive disorders. Disruptive mood dysregulation is temper outbursts. And this is seen, it's usually given to children. This is a diagnosis for children. Chronic and severe persistent irritability in children. And there's recurrent temper outbursts and verbal rages and physical aggression towards people and property. And it's just out of proportion what would be a typical tantrum in a child. What's typical? Right. What's normal? Okay, so very distressing for parents. And then you have major depressive disorder. And this is what's important about, again, we're going to go more detail next week, but major depressive disorder has to have certain markers. We use the word depression really lightly. Oh, I'm depressed. And you can use that. That's okay. But to actually have the name major depressive disorder, you have to have had a major depressive episode for a certain length of time, and that episode has certain markers and symptoms. Now, where it's different is that the moment you go past that one episode and you go into other challenges, you still have the same diagnoses. In other words, if somebody's never had an actual depressive episode, which we'll talk more about next week, they might end up with what you would call persistent depressive disorder, which means they've never had this low episode, can't get out of bed, can't function at all. They've never had this low suicidal major depressive episode, but they have this on. So this is Eeyore. Okay, and I actually have a picture of him next week. And this is what the Shapiros call the disciple killer. This is they function, they keep going, but that cloud is over their head every single day. The Shapiros do a great job on really helping people understand in their book that I've already mentioned, Rejoice Always, how incredibly challenging that is. So the moment somebody, though, has a depressive episode, their diagnosis is different. It's now a major depressive disorder. And then you have, okay, so we all know about PMS because most women experience certain symptoms of PMS. But PMD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, is a whole nother level. And how much do I have on that in here? That's next week as well. But that has to do with, yes, the swings are connected with the menstruation cycle, but to another whole other extent. So again, it's a depressive disorder associated with a hormonal imbalance. Okay, and we can be pretty dismissive of that particular disorder because, oh, you just have PMS. But they are, and again, okay, so here's PMS on this side, and here's a severe PMDD on this side, and it's a spectrum. The reality is it's very challenging. And so it's really important that we're not dismissive of what people experience, in, because hormones, and it's just not a feminine thing, hormones hugely affect mood. And so when they're raging, I mean, hello, if you've raised a teenager, you know this, right? So hormones are, if you've gone through menopause, you can often have, I remember, I am a therapist. I studied this. I have a doctorate. And it was Carrie Schultz that's like, yeah, you know, sometimes you just cry more when you're going through menopause. And I was like, oh, that's why you just kind of can forget that some of these symptoms you're experiencing are hormonally related, men and women. Okay, the bipolar disorders, again, that's going to be in detail next week, is where you'll get a combination of depressive symptoms and manic symptoms. The difference between bipolar 1 and 2 is the level of the manic symptoms. A manic episode would be what you would look at as far as the high amount of spending and high impulsive sexuality. A hypomanic episode is, there might not be spending and sexuality, but going and doing crazy amounts of tasks out majorly out of the norm. So 1 and 2, the difference is between the level of the swings. Yeah.
Is postpartum depression another under that?
It's got its own in connection with, they'll mention it in the depressive disorders. It doesn't have its own label within the DSM. Yeah, so this, what's important about that is that it's absolutely hormonally associated and life associated. It's mentioned in the DSM. It doesn't have its own diagnostic category. Yeah, I know, it should, right? I mean, right, it took forever. Actually, PMDD is brand new, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So we're just now really giving credence to the influence of hormones on female mental health. Okay, so you do have separation anxiety disorder. We're going to deal with all those in more detail next week, but this would mostly be found in children, but it can actually go into adulthood. That would be the spectrum and the lifespan. And that does have to do with the response to a lot of either temper tantrums when separated or to avolition, which is the lack of motivation and not being able to function, the crying and the separation from others and the withdrawal that will happen. So it can both be temper tantrums and it can be withdrawal for anxiety disorder. Mutism, so this is that in certain circumstances, not talking again, you're looking, notice the lifespan here. So this is the, we're looking first at childhood disorders and going into what would be more considered adult disorders within the DSM. Specific phobias would be the thing that we understand as phobias. So this would be spiders or something else. So phobias, there is a whole list in the DSM of all the different phobias that someone can have. Social anxiety disorder is unfortunately really undiagnosed. With the clients I work with, especially if they have a trauma background, it is very common that there's, when I say coming into this room is difficult, there's a certain percentage of our population within our family that has a really hard time coming to church, and it's not because they're not spiritual, it's because it's really hard for them to come into loud, active environments. And so we have to be really aware of that difficulty and have great discernment and care and compassion when that is what someone is challenged with. So that's social anxiety, which can come out in, yes, speaking before people, but it can also come out in the concerns with that people are thinking negatively about me when I walk in a room, that they are looking at what I look like and having negative comments, and we can go, oh, you're too worried about what people think, when actually it might be a social anxiety disorder. So we can slam people's experiences with, you need to stop being a people pleaser. And that's what just, it can be hard to figure out which one it is. Yeah. Is this something that is, it needs to be discipled and you need to be outgoing and giving and stop thinking about yourself, you selfish person, right? Or is it that, okay, this is an anxiety disorder that might have its roots in trauma, and boy, we better pay attention to that and be compassionate about that. It's often somewhere in there. We can't usually go, it's this, or it's this. We want to, but we often can't. Panic episodes are a part of generalized anxiety disorder, and actually several of these, but there is just a disorder called panic disorder, and like you are probably envisioning. Panic would be the heart rate, the feeling like you're dying, feeling like you're having a heart attack. So there's a physical body response in a panic disorder. And the challenge with panic disorders is that they'll come at any time. They can come out of nowhere. And the other piece with it is that then it can create, I don't want to go into a situation that might cause a panic disorder. So panic is very scary. People feel like they can't breathe and so on. So again, very important where we'll be like, you know, you need to stop being like that, versus when I'm working with people in my office, I'm working with how to breathe and how to accept worried thoughts and how, you know, that the treatment for panic disorder is vital to most of these, whether it's just a panic episode within major depressive disorder or generalized anxiety disorder, because they overlap. Depression and anxiety like each other, and often people have, you know, they're two sides of the same coin. Generalized anxiety disorder is the idea of that all of that it, your anxiety comes out in multiple different areas. So it's different from OCD in that OCD will be very distinct. Certain circumstances like health-related and germ-related issues or things that are that clear and that specific. Generalized anxiety disorder is more, the word worry is what we would think about, is a constant experience of worry. And again, we're going to do more of that next week. Okay, so OCD, we know these. So what they changed in the DSM is they have a whole category just for obsessive compulsive disorders, and they rearranged all of these. Obsessive compulsive disorder is no longer in the anxiety disorders, and I can't tell you how much I disagree with that, but they did give it its own category and put all of these in with it. So yes, you have the obsessive thoughts. So obsessive compulsive disorder, you actually don't have to have compulsions to have an OCD diagnosis. In other words, just having this constant, I cannot stop thinking about whether I turned off the burner, you know. And so, yes, the checking would be the compulsive behavior, but some people just obsess about the worries. And it's very, very much like, in just that part, it's very much like generalized anxiety disorder. But the level of the gripping of the thoughts is much stronger with OCD. Yes, then if they also have the compulsions, which is quite common. And the compulsions can be praying, actually. If I pray enough, and I have to say more prayers, because if I don't say these prayers. So the compulsions can be hand washing like you picture, right? That would be the most common one. Who watches Monk? Okay, so you see all of these in Monk, but the reality is it can look like a lot of different things. I actually have multiple clients right now dealing with OCD. So body dysmorphic disorder is a negative view of a certain part or certain parts of the body. Now, again, we can go, you need to stop thinking about negative things about yourself. Oh, no, you're fine. And it's actually an anxiety disorder. It's just focused on body parts, but it's still a compulsive disorder. And so people will go into all kinds of different behaviors to deal with that body part, whether it's surgeries or diets or whatever, you know, changes in their body and so on. So body dysmorphic disorder is a very real, very distressing, very suffering causing disorder. And again, we have to be careful to say, you just need to feel good about your body. God made you. And this is more of an OCD type. This is a obsessive compulsive disorder. We know what hoarding disorder looks like because we have whole shows devoted to it, but it's very distressing. I have individuals now who have come to my office, and their family members have hoarding disorder, and so it doesn't just bring distress to the individual, but it does to those in their lives. And of course, you can also get into just functioning becomes difficult, health becomes difficult, and so on. Trichotillomania is where hair pulling, where they pull the hair from most of their body, not just any one area, but their entire body. So that can be eyebrows, yes, the hair, and but also body hair as well. And then excoriation is I again worked with multiple individuals with where they continually pick all of their body. So when I'm working with parents, will come in and they'll say, my kid does this, and it's so frustrating, they won't stop. You know, they keep pulling their hair and they keep picking their skin and they won't stop, and they're frustrated and they slap their hands. So what's interesting about, they've put it in this obsessive compulsive category, and I'm like, no, it's in the anxiety category, because they're very, very, very associated with anxiety. But then the behavior becomes compulsive, but the root is in the anxiety. So that's why it's really important to discern between that. Okay, so with OCD, you do have recurrent persistent thoughts, urges, or images that are experienced at some time during the disturbance as intrusive and unwanted. Those are the two big words, like I don't want these. I'll have individuals that tell me that they just get thoughts in their mind, these just brief flashes in their mind of, oh my gosh, I'm going to steal that. Oh my gosh, I'm going to kiss him right now. And they can't, and they're not going to, but they can't get the thought. It's like, okay, when you do the whole think of the pink elephant in the room, who did not think of a pink elephant right now? Yes. Okay, don't think about a pink elephant right now. Do not think about a pink elephant right now. Stop thinking about a pink elephant right now. I mean, right? So it's the, I don't want this thought, and I cannot get it out of my head. So that would be the intrusive and unwanted, and it creates a huge amount of anxiety. And it can be about things, especially for religious individuals, that seem like maybe I'm just trying to be spiritual and righteous. Okay, don't think that sexual thought. Don't think that sexual thought. Don't think that sexual thought. Don't think that. That's actually most often more the OCD than it is the trying to be, the concern about righteousness. And not that the concern isn't there, but that thinking can be more of the OCD speaking. It literally talking to you. So, and so they try to ignore it and suppress it and neutralize it with some kind of thought or action. So that would be the compulsive side. And then they can be the hand washing, ordering, praying, counting, repeating. I included these because it's just important to realize that it can look like a spiritual thing when it could be spiritual, but that it might actually be a compulsion. I have to do this in order, especially if I sinned, then I really have to do that a lot. And so the reason why those compulsions occur is because they're trying to reduce anxiety and distress, because it's very scary. It's not, and often, most of the individuals I work with, they know it's not helpful. They know they don't need to do that thing, but they still have to do that thing. They have, even though they know they don't actually need to, so it's beyond, feeling reality.
Mm-hmm. We're told to pray without ceasing. How do you discriminate?
Right, so that's just it. When I'm working with individuals, we talk about how, what would be in obedience to that scripture that we do need to pray about everything, and when does it go over into, if I don't pray about this, X, Y, and Z might happen.
Mm-hmm. Could it be people who go transgender might have a compulsion behind that, or is that something that...
Mm-hmm. Honestly, that can go into body dysmorphic disorder. I mean, there are all kinds of different religious thoughts on all the different things that might overlap into transgender, but yes, it can. Okay, so what are the? So this is the whole section on trauma, right? There's the reactive attachment disorder, which is it's so hard doing this in 1 hour and 45 minutes, okay? Because reactive attachment disorder needs about 10 hours. It's very distressing. Commonly, I'll just tell you a story. I was working with two individuals who were both adopted in their 2-ish, 3-ish, 4-ish age from a North European country, lived in orphanages before that, and I was seeing them in their teenage years, and so she were, the rocking in the chair, 24 hours, 24/7. The young man that I worked with, he was still peeing and defecating on his clothes and food because he wanted to make sure nobody took them. So these are, the trauma from those early years is coming out in reactive attachment disorder. There are very, very amazing treatments for reactive attachment disorder. If you're curious about those, I'd be glad to send you to who I think is a really good practitioner, or give you a website with a practitioner that I think does some great work. The reality is, again, what's underneath all of that is some trauma reactions, and so that's why we're going to kind of sit on that for a bit. You do have, I don't know why this is in parentheses, disinhibited social engagement disorder. I'm going to just go on from here. PTSD. So PTSD was the beginning of studying trauma. We didn't get that label till after the Vietnam War. And if you ever want to read just a readable book, read Vander Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score. and he's the premier researcher on trauma, and he was the premier researcher on PTSD. So while he was working on PTSD, he started realizing that then he'd have these individuals come into their clinic that had been abused as children and had the same symptoms as these, many of the same symptoms as these men from Vietnam. And he started realizing, wait. And so then the field of trauma just continued to grow through the years. That we start now, we understand that actually these neglect itself, no physical or emotional, no physical or sexual abuse, but just neglect itself can create many of the PTSD symptoms. So acute trauma disorder is when, like, somebody goes and sees violence, or they're a part of a natural disaster, and so they might have PTSD symptoms over a short term. But what we're actually realizing is that some of the greatest amounts of traumas are those little teeny repeated traumas during childhood that can occur in the first several years, and especially if they get into 7, 8 years old and they're still in that environment. So honestly, most treatment is not trauma-informed. So if someone's got a trauma background and you're looking for therapy, it's really important to choose somebody that is a trauma-informed therapist, because that's just a whole nother ball of wax when you're dealing with background issues what you're really seeing is trauma reactions. And then, so under the trauma and stress-related disorders is adjustment disorder. So if you go to a therapist and they don't know what name to give you, often they'll put you in the category of an adjustment disorder so that you can have insurance coverage. It's, in all honesty, I don't mean this negatively if this has been your diagnosis, but in the world of psychotherapy, this is called the trash can diagnosis. And other, not by those who actually give it, but by the rest. That it doesn't fit somewhere in here, but maybe it'll fit here, and I really want to make sure you get insurance coverage. So it just, you know, basically means that there are major transitions happening in your life, and you're having a lot of these stress-related symptoms. So in other words, the trauma or the stressor. So they put this up, PTSD is post-traumatic stress disorder. So these are the stressor disorders. The stressor and adjustment disorder might be a move, it might be a marriage, it might be a child being born, it might be a school-related. And so people, when they go away to college, experience a lot of these symptoms, and it can be an adjustment disorder. People that move across country and they've left all of their family, or they move from country to country. So that could fall under an adjustment disorder. Now remember, these are just names that were given to a clump of symptoms, right? In all reality, when you look at people's circumstances, you go, well, heck, yeah, that would cause anybody stress. And it's very real, and it's very distressing, and this is very, very hard for you. So whether an actual name is put on it or not, the distress is very, very real. So what is trauma? Trauma is an emotional response to a terrible event like an accident, a rape, or a natural disaster. Immediately after the event, shock and denial are typical. This is really under the PTSD diagnoses. Longer-term reactions include unpredictable emotions, flashbacks, strained relationships, and physical symptoms like headaches and nausea. If you were to look at those reactions, especially those last few, and people are experiencing difficulty in friendships, they have unpredictable emotions and they've got headaches and nausea, and somebody's telling them you have an anxiety disorder, and they never treat the trauma that's behind the anxiety disorder, it's very problematic. So, also in trauma, anything that causes those feelings of being overwhelmed and powerless. We do know that with traumatic events, they're not unnoticed. They stay in the body, even if somebody else doesn't even know it happened to you. It's in your brain and it's in your body. They don't go unnoticed. And there can also be just a strong preoccupation with the thoughts, with the flashes in the mind, with the memories of it. They intrude when you don't want them in the middle of a really great time. And just out of the blue, the memories will come back up. So that would be the flashback. And over time, people can raise their tolerance level. So this would be the distress tolerance piece, where they can through different therapies, tolerate the distress of the memory or the flashback. There are lots of different treatments for PTSD. Again, we're going to cover them in more detail. But often what happens is that in order to tolerate them, they'll do different behaviors. And this is where it looks a lot more like OCD, where they'll do different behaviors to get rid of it. Or it'll go into drug and alcohol, you know, I want to avoid, I want to not remember. So when you have a trauma background and then you also have a substance abuse, often the substance abuse is a trauma response. I'm trying to medicate my trauma. And they don't even know that. That's not like they're saying that. It's not like they even recognize it themselves. But that's actually pretty common. Trauma's real. It is not, you know, some kind of thing that somebody made up. It gets stored in the body. And it can cause all kinds of different symptoms that can be very, very challenging. So Van der Kolk's book, he talks about that some of the six main things you see with individuals with trauma is the intrusive thoughts. This is very similar to the DSM. The constant need to expose yourself purposefully to the trauma in order to try to get rid of it. Avoiding and numbing, so that's where you're going to get into the drug and alcohol behaviors. The challenge with when you get aroused, when the heart rate goes up, you don't have modulated, so that's very common to trauma. And I can't pay attention, or there's just too many things coming at me. It's very challenging to concentrate. And then defense mechanisms and changes in personality and identity are very common with trauma. So I'm not going to go there because I just did. Okay, that's a lot. Okay, I just traumatized you with all of that information. Sorry, and I have to go on to something else because I see tears. And I want you to know I'm paying attention to that, and I feel kind of bad myself going on. But now we're going to go to another type, all right? This is another type. This is disruptive impulse and conduct disorders. There is a lot of controversy around these. They're commonly given in the childhood years. ODD is oppositional defiant disorder. Intermittent explosive disorder, conduct disorder, pyromania, and kleptomania. So oppositional, it would be where they have a pattern of angry, irritated mood, they're argumentative and defiant, they're vindictive. And they the anger and irritableness is where they're losing their temper, they're easily annoyed, they're angry and resentful. Argumentative and defiant, which would mean that they argue with authority figures, including as children, they argue with adults. Actively defies and refuses to comply, blames others, and we're all going, oh my gosh, that's my child. So, but that's a pretty serious diagnosis. There's a lot of thoughts about these diagnoses. I'd love to have a longer conversation with you about these. They were quite painful for me to read them when I first started, because I feel like they can pathologize what might be just a response to trauma, or might be a challenge in their environment that they need help with, or they might be being bullied and this is how they're responding. So it's these can be very pathologizing. At the same time, if it gets somebody some help with a school psychologist, okay, great. So again, it's the positive and the negative of all of them. Intermittent explosive is basically a verbal and physical aggression. The thing is though, it's a lot of verbal and physical aggression. Explosions 2 to 3 times a week for at least 3 months, those are without causing physical damage to a person or property, or 3 times in a year causing damage to a person or property. When you get into conduct disorder, you get into a whole different level of disorders, because this is where we've seen it in the movies. They're harming cats and kittens. They're harming small animals. Well, that is actually the major point of conduct disorder, is that there's purposeful harm. But the harm can actually include aggression towards people, bullies, threatening, intimidating, stealing, forcing someone into sex. So the forced behaviors are pretty broad. Fire setting, lying, violation of rules, conduct disorder. I've worked with kids where they've gone and seen a psychologist. They come back and the parents tell me, yeah, they got a conduct disorder. And I'm just like, I have to tell you, I felt fury enter my body, because I'm like, okay, this kid has some attention problems and they throw fits in class. Do you know what conduct disorder is? It's a precursor to antisocial personality disorder, so please do not put that title on that child. So this was me as the school therapist going, what the heck, when they would give these different diagnoses, right? It is important that if these serious things are happening, that they do get the care as early as possible. So again, here's the positive and the negative to giving these a diagnosis. And it's just important to honor both of those things. So let's go. Pyromania and kleptomania is fires and stealing. We're going to spend a whole week in 2 weeks on sex and drugs. Yes, we are. And so I'm just going to glance at these. Substance abuse disorders, alcohol, abuse and dependence from the DSM. Now it's on the spectrum called alcohol use disorder. Drug-related disorders, yes, the addition is that cannabis use disorder was placed in the DSM, and actually so was caffeine. Go figure. And so was tobacco. So interesting additions, right? And gambling disorder is the only behavioral disorder included in the DSM, which I think is hilarious because I think there's quite a few. We just don't have enough, they say we don't have enough research to include other ones. So drug addiction. Caffeine is often taken in larger amounts or over a longer period than was intended. This is my weekly grocery list. Coffee, more coffee. Try not to scream at anybody this time. I should get my coffee on the way there. And bread. Here's the grocery list. Craving or desire, strong desire or urge to use. I actually meant to put the word caffeine in it, coffee in there. There is a persistent desire or unsuccessful efforts to cut down or control the use. A great deal of time is spent in activities necessary to obtain. Yeah, how many times have you stood in the long line at Starbucks, right? Sometimes you meet people who change you for the better. These people are called baristas. Important social, occupational, or recreational activities are given up or reduced because of use. Drink coffee. Do stupid things faster with more energy. Recurrent use resulting in a failure to fulfill obligations and continued use despite the fact that there's stupid things happening in your life, right? Recurrent use in situations that are physically hazardous. All right, so, right, using huge equipment, maybe not a good idea, and a need for markedly increased amounts to achieve intoxication and desired effect. Now, although I'm using caffeine because I think it's the most we can kind of laugh at, the reality is caffeine intoxication and caffeine addiction are actually very real, where the reason why we know that, caffeine is one of the most strongest addictive drugs, because when you go off of it, what happens? You get headaches. You actually have withdrawal symptoms. So it is an addictive drug. Right, and people feel they get lethargic, they have sleeping problems, and so on. So this is what you might be. Caffeine use is continued despite knowledge of having persistent or recurrent physical or psychological problems that are likely to have been caused or exacerbated by the drug. Right, so anyway, although I'm laughingly putting this out there, we're going to talk quite seriously about it in a couple weeks because any kind of drugs causing, those are literally, everything I just read you is actually out of the DSM. I just put silly pictures with it. All right, so in our remaining minutes, how many do we have? Yeah, shoot. The personality disorders were almost dropped from the DSM. Why? We have almost no backing to include them. Because now they're saying if it doesn't have good research, we can't include it. Personality disorders don't have good research. These are the most ones you're common, that you are very aware of. They fall into these categories, odd and eccentric, dramatic, emotional, and erratic, anxious and fearful. Those are the three categories in the DSM. The ones you are most interested in usually is the antisocial, the borderline, the narcissistic. Those are the three most popular ones because my spouse is a narcissist, my brother is a narcissist. We use those words very, very easily. She is a borderline. You know, it's just these are very popular terms. Psychopath, sociopath, the term now is antisocial personality disorder. So in older movies and even now, you'll hear that word, you're a psychopath, you're a sociopath. Actually, that is now called antisocial personality disorder. So we're not going to go into these, but I just want to nod to them because they can be very distressing. And I can't tell you the number of times people will say to me, I have this, my husband has this. And so what I pay attention to as a therapist is the symptoms that they're talking about. And they're very, very distressing. Borderline in particular has, and they have great treatments now for borderline. DBT is a great treatment for borderline. Empathy. Can you teach people empathy? That would be the antisocial personality disorder. Can you teach people empathy? In my experience, you absolutely can, but it's a valid question. Can people who have done harm to others and don't feel empathy in their bodies. Often it's because they don't have any self-empathy, and so then they also don't have empathy for others. So can you teach people to have empathy for others? I think you can. Every situation, I don't know, but I know I've helped people have empathy. I don't work in the hospitals with the more severe examples of these things, but I think the main thing being is that whatever one, actually when I teach this class, this is actually a pretty fun class, we go over, when I teach it to the students, we go over each one, and then I give them little strips, and they are to go act out that personality, and we have a party. And then you have to write down who you think each student in the class is, and it's actually a really fun, kind of crazy way. If we had more time, we would do that. The reality is, yes, there are certain markers for these personality disorders, but the reality is all of them are very distressing. Yeah.
So the question that just popped up for me was, so when we read in the Bible about people being possessed.
Right, possession.
They've had all these disorders, or is this coming, is, I mean, is this spiritually...
Right, is this a spiritual thing, or is this a personality disorder?
Yeah.
Right. So I would like to answer that question for you right now, but I do not have the time because we have a whole 5 minutes and I have 10 more slides. But the reality is, what I do know is that whatever you call it, when someone reads the Bible, it's life-changing. So getting people in the Word, praying with them and loving them, just like Jesus taught, is the answer. It might not fix this, but it will absolutely certainly give them a different life to live. So is it a demon or is it a, you know, yeah, a disorder, right? Okay. Just briefly to let you know, the DSM also includes all the sleep disorders. Yes, they're all in there. Insomnia, hypersomnolence, meaning you sleep a lot. Okay, that might be some of our teenagers. Narcolepsy, falling asleep really quickly, and then all the somatic disorders, which means that basically that what you're experiencing in a sensation in your body, you're pretty sure that is an either an illness or something's injured in your body, and that will overlap into illness, anxiety symptom, conversion disorder, factitious is lying. So all of these have to do with pain syndromes. When I was studying these syndromes, actually literally in class, I get a call. My sister was in a really bad place in her life, and she had had cancer. And then she was cancer-free because she had melanoma. And so therefore, they cut it all out, and she was cancer-free, which actually with she had fourth-stage melanoma. With fourth-stage melanoma, you actually are never cancer-free after that. It's a 0%. So but they had told her they couldn't, it wasn't showing up on the scans, but she was experiencing a lot of pain in her body. And it was a little hard to tell, was the pain real? Because when it starts with an actual illness, it can be the illness, and it can be more of a somatic disorder, and it's really, really hard to tell the difference. And so, but it was so distressing to her, she did take her life. It was very, very distressing. So although we're quickly going through these, all of these create suffering, and we need to be compassionate. It's just difficult with the somatic disorders, that boundary between psychiatry and medicine. Doctors' offices are the ones that hear the most about them, and they're the ones that hear the most about mental health. So the line between the body and the mental health is difficult. We do know that when we're saying it's my body that's sick, it can be very associated with stress and with trauma and things happening within our society and culture. But the thing is that if someone's experiencing those symptoms, send them to a medical evaluation. We can go, well, you're not really sick, you're being hypochondriac. Not super helpful.
No.
But it's a hard balance because I work with people that it is destroying their... It's very, very hard on their life how often this person's going to the doctor. So... again, very challenging, and it's just really an inappropriate diagnosis if somebody is medically ill, like my sister with cancer. We do have the feeding and eating disorders. This is in children. You'll see pica and rumination, where they're eating different objects or they're chewing on them and swallowing them and then bringing them back up to chew on them some more. Avoid and restrictive intake disorder is kind of like a precursor to anorexia. Anorexia and bulimia are the... restrictive intake is anorexia, bulimia is the causing to throw up, and then the binge eating disorder is the eating but not the throwing up. And I am an eating disorder specialist, so I see a lot of this in my office, and almost without fail, all of these eating disorders are associated with some form of trauma or anxiety disorders. The anxiety with all of these is very, very high, and it comes out in eating behaviors very, very commonly. And we're going to talk about sexual disorders in 2 weeks. This is for those who have parents who have neurocognitive disorders. So this is where they have Alzheimer's, or they've had a TBI, meaning they've been in an accident, or they've been in the military, and their parts of their brain have been hit and affected. Lewy bodies is just, similar to Alzheimer's. That's, boy, I'd get hit for that by a neurosurgeon, but same idea, or a stroke or Parkinson's. All of those, so again, you see the lifespan, we've now hit the later years. All of these affect the brain, and then you can also have all these same neurocognitive symptoms that you have with Alzheimer's with medication can cause all of these symptoms, or drugs, taking illicit drugs. So we said we were going to cover the brain, but we're going to have to do that on a different week because the brain is very involved in everything I've just talked about today. So this is what we're going to cover at another time, is that it affects the whole body. And we're going to talk about medication later, and it has been lovely to be with you today.
So, see you next Saturday, I guess.
See you next Saturday.
Jennifer has some books over here if you're interested. And if there's something you'd like us to get, let me know, and we'll try to order it for next week.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps you give me a list of some of the books you've mentioned that you'd like me to order.
Okay. Well, not.